Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Did you bring your thinking caps? Because it's time to put them on. Because the conversation starts now. Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. We are at the spot right here. This is my place. Where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. We are back in Australia. Hell, I might as well get a condo down there. I'm down there so much with my amazing guests, but we have Ashley Moreland. We're going to talk about neuroscience. I love to talk about the brain, brains. We're going to talk about overthinking it, you know, trauma, recovery. She has this amazing process. I wrote it down. She's got 6 steps that's going to help us get through some questions we need to ask ourselves, some processes. Everybody deals with trauma differently. Everybody deals with getting over trauma. And some people are headed for trauma. So this is going to be a very interesting conversation, and I'm loving to have her here. She just sent her 2 kids. It's Saturday. So she's not sending them to school, but I asked her. She's got that little girl. I'm telling you, she's the sweetest thing, and I'm sure her son is equally as sweet. Talk to her about parenting, too, because it's not easy. I'm wondering what it's like having 2 little ones. I'd probably pull my afro out. So tell me a little bit about you, Ashley Moreland. How do you show up in the world, queen?
All righty. It's so lovely to be here. Thank you so much for hosting me.
Absolutely.
I have a passion for people. I have a heart for people. And my goal is to be able to see people for who they are, but not the egoic self. So the egoic self being the self that makes mistakes, that, stuffs up, that hurts people, that reacts to their world. Being able to see through that and seeing people authentically for who they are at soul level. That's what I'm about.
Let me dial back a little bit, because you attack something that I hold very near and dear to my heart and I nurture, is the ego.
Yes.
See, the ego is the gateway to the soul. And it is definitely a diaspora of different aspects, different goals, different dreams. I work with an ego coach, and it's amazing because I learned to feed it. I learned to nurture it. I learned to heal it, but also to read other people's egos and feed into what they want. Because if you suppress it, it's like a pressure cooker.
Absolutely.
You know, you put so much pressure on it, and then all of a sudden, if you don't get the attention you need, kaboom, kabam, it goes absolutely nuts. So we want to meet people where they are, but we also have to have the ability and the capacity to receive them where they are. Okay.
Yes.
Because, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road. People talk all this, you know, goo-goo about, oh yeah, I want to be authentic and, you know, the true self. Well, you know, I say it all the time. Everybody can't show up in their true self. They have to send their representative, because their true self is jacked up.
That's step 3 and 4 of my 6-step thing.
I told you we were in alignment. I knew what was happening, because folks is tricky. All right. So now, as you developed this, how did you get into this line of work and neuroscience? What happened? Did you overcome some trauma of your own?
Oh my gosh, yes. So I have a very long list of trauma that I experienced in my life. And so many times, like right up until probably the first 20 years of my life, just stuff that people could go through their whole lives without experiencing. And I just had it relentlessly for a period of time. Everything from the big stuff, like I was diagnosed with a brain tumor when I was 18, and I had been symptomatic for years, and that was just missed by doctors. I have experienced obviously significant deaths of loved ones, and a lot of people will experience that. But also just like a house burnt down. We had an electrical fire in the home that I grew up in and lost just about everything. My mum had an aneurysm around the same time. There was just so many things. And then going back to my, to my earlier childhood, I grew up in a home where alcoholism was really present and mental illness. I never had healthy relationships modeled to me. So it was just something that was always present in my life. And then when I was 16, I moved from my hometown in a small country town in Queensland, and I moved to Melbourne on my own. So I looked it up. It's 1535 kilometers or 953 miles, depending on what units you prefer. So I moved by myself when I was 16, and I moved to start university. So I think another thing, looking back, I didn't realize was significant trauma, but I was a really intelligent kid. And now as an adult, ADHD, probably ASD, but I'm not diagnosed. My son is ASD though. And so learning through him and journeying with him, I've kind of realized, whoa, my childhood makes a lot of sense. And so I think for me, I grew up feeling like I never, ever fitted in anywhere. I never fitted in. And although that was really hard for me at the time, and I can definitely see the impacts that that's had on me throughout my life, I think when you embrace the fact that if you're not fitting in, you're standing out, that was a massive turning point for me.
So how did this affect you in your adolescence as far as like making friends and dating and all of that? Was that traumatic for you as well? Because what happens if you've got all this trauma going on one side, and then you're trying to find your own identity as a young adult on this other side, and 16 is early to go to the university. They don't go to university normally until about 18, 19 here.
Yeah.
So you had this thing called gifted.
Yes.
Okay. And people have told me that gifted children, it's a double-edged sword. How was that during your adolescent years?
Well, looking back is where I get all of the revelations, because my every relationship that I had, from friendships to boyfriends, it was all trauma bonding. And I had carried my own trauma. My nervous system literally embedded and encoded the trauma that I had experienced. And so when someone else just as traumatized and just as dysfunctional as I was at the time came along, my nervous system felt safe with them because it recognized them as familiar. Wow. And so when I look back, the friends that I had just fed into drama and drama and drama. The relationships that I had, there was cheating, there was, psychological abuse, there was all this kind of stuff. And it wasn't until I was 30, I was a few years after having separated from my husband, and I just woke up one day, and the first line of the book that I'm currently working on is, I can't do this anymore. And it was just a turning point for me where I just woke up one day and I literally thought, I'm either going to break down and die or I'm going to break through this. They're my only options.
Wow.
So it was a massive turning point. And, everything shedded from my life. The friendships that I had that were trauma bonds, that were built on, connecting through gossiping and connecting through tearing people down and connecting through just whinging and almost competing on whose life was worse.
Right.
Yeah. And all of that changed. Now I look around my life and the people we connect through encouraging each other and building each other up and supporting each other. And it's healthy. And I have the healthiest relationship that I've ever had.
Right.
My kids are the best they've ever been.
Right. How's your relationship with your parents?
The healthiest it's ever been. So for so many years, I held so much hurt and resentment, particularly towards my father. And I'm so fortunate that he's one of the closest people in my life now. And I'm so fortunate that although I would never ask to go back and be exposed to alcoholism and physical violence and all those kinds of things, being able to see, and you touched on this before, being able to actually see that those behaviors were a product of his trauma. Those behaviors, it wasn't that I wasn't worthy of love. I believed that for many years. It wasn't that I deserved it. Of course not. No one deserves that. But he did the best that he could. And my mum did the best that she could. And everyone did the best that they could with the resources that they had and the trauma that their nervous system was carrying that drove their actions and behaviors.
Right.
And so
that lets me know that you are resilient and that you are respectful and that you have the capacity and the bandwidth to love. Some people will never get over that, you know.
It is hard. And forgiveness. I mean, forgiveness, we always think that if we forgive someone, we're saying that what they've done is okay. There is a total, complete difference between saying, oh, it's okay that you did all those things, because fundamentally it's not. Right. But I have love and forgiveness in my heart that I can say, I'm freeing myself of that. I don't want to carry that anymore. So I'm choosing to forgive you and choosing love. Right. And like I said, to be able to, I just want to honor the people in my life that have hurt me, to be able to have honest conversations with them and tell them how those things affected me. Mm. And my dad has undergone such significant healing and so much growth in that experience. And I don't think he ever expected that his actions would have had that effect on us.
Right. Or that you would be big enough to forgive him, because he went through so much. So it's very important to, again, like you say, recognize what someone's done. You know, my mother never said I was sorry.
Yeah.
You know, that was not in her vernacular. And I used to say, Mama, you're not sorry. She says, I recognize what I've done. I acknowledge what I've done. I won't do it again. But those two words, I'm sorry, she found them shallow and insignificant, because situations where someone's embezzled, you know, your life savings, and there you are on the street homeless, I'm sorry. Or they've killed someone, I'm sorry. Or they've drunk driving, oh, I'm sorry. Those things are not going to replace or even come anywhere near to the emotion that you feel. Now, that's not that you're not remorseful, I get it. And to be able to say I'm sorry to be able to forgive is for you, more so than the other person, because you can go through this. Now, did you study neuroscience in college?
Yeah, so my pathway was completely random. I always wanted to, I was an athlete and I raced BMX at an international level.
Go ahead now.
And I always wanted to work in elite sports. So when I left school, I studied sports science and I did a commerce degree. It was very random. And I took that path, but I specialized in neuroscience. So particularly neurophysiology and neuroplasticity. So how the brain and how the nervous system adapts and responds to the stimuli in which it's presented with, or the environment around it. And so it was really interesting for me. I did 10 years of study to build a career, and I have a wonderful career in academia and research. But then my life took me on this path of basically during COVID, when COVID happened and we had the program that I teach into was discontinued. And I hit rock bottom and went, I've spent 10 years of my life building this career, and now tertiary education sector is in a shambles. And I just thought to myself, unless I work at a uni or a hospital, there's not much need for me in society. And then this landed, like literally it was almost like I had a vision of stepping stones, where I was just walking along through my life and stepping out in faith. Mm. And as each step I took, a stone was placed under my foot. And, you know, it was just a matter of conversations with the right person at the right time, a book recommendation by the right person at the right time, a conversation here, lining up for coffee one day. And it led me on the path that I'm on now. And it is mind-blowing. And again, like I see this as going, God has a plan for me. There is a plan that I don't see, but he sees. I don't know, but he knows. I don't hear, but he knows. And it's just been incredible.
That's what faith is.
Exactly.
That's what faith is.
And so rather than looking at the 10 years that I built this career thinking, oh, well, I'm not using that anymore, it's been unbelievable to see how every single thing that I've experienced in my life, everything that I learned, even if it seems irrelevant, is actually what makes it so relevant. Mm-hmm. Because now that's what gives me an understanding of trauma, because of my lived experiences, but also understanding how trauma is encoded within our nervous system and literally drives the thoughts that we have. The thoughts that we have drives the actions that we take. The actions that we take reinforce and provide evidence for our subconscious mind and the belief systems. And so being able to apply my knowledge that I built in a completely different context. And I don't know, it's really hard to describe. Like,
well, it's God and his faith.
And absolutely.
And, you know, again, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear every single time. And that manifestation. And it was something that you wanted, something that you worked for. So tell us a little bit about what you're actually doing right now.
Yeah. So what I'm doing right now is I work with all kinds of people. So whether they're individuals, families, couples, because it actually doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who it is or the dynamic of the group, even in workplaces and businesses. If you look at the word relationship is not about the person that you're sharing a bed with. Relationship is the way that two or more people or things are connected. It's the state of being connected. And another way of looking at it is it's the way in which two or more people or groups regard and behave towards each other. And so, as you already touched on, we not only need to be aware of our traumas and our experiences and what's encoded in our nervous system, but we also need to be aware of that in others. When people are acting out, when people are, you know, behaving in a hurt way or an angry way, then we can see through that action or through that behavior to the underlying hurt, what's actually driving it. And so I work with people to teach them how to relate, either with themselves, with others, in their homes, in their workplaces. And that's really how all this came about. So,
well, you're helping others, but you are continuously working on yourself, because as we help people, we uncover things about ourselves. It's like, example, you mentioned the word gossip. Girl, I don't know. We all exchange information. Somebody's going to do something and you're going to mention it in a casual way. But if it is snarky or if it's condescending, or you put that little extra sugar on it, you know, you want to ramp it up. You really want it to be juicy. I mean, you know, and I saw them and your eyes get all big. And that's destructive.
Absolutely.
It's really destructive. And it hurts people. That's where the bullying comes in.
Yeah.
You don't know how that person's going to receive it. Suicide by death is on the rise. Yes. I don't know why, really, me, I don't understand how people get so traumatized through this device. Because, girl, I will turn it off, unfriend, and block you in a heartbeat. I'm not going to be bothered with all that stuff. I don't know how people feed into that. What is the additional emotion and adrenaline that's going on, you know, with, because I know that you're at least 20 to 30 years my junior. Why are people so attached to this device and believe everything that they see come across the screen to the point where they want to hurt themselves? I don't get it.
It's human needs. So when you think about the model of human needs that I use, there's six human needs. And so one of those human needs is significance. One is connection. And so obviously the other two are certainty and variety. And then significance and growth are also human needs, but they're kind of the products of the first four being met. Now, we can have those human needs met in a healthy way, but if we're not having them met in a healthy way, we'll meet them in an unhealthy way. Mm. And so things like significance, I get significance through making a difference in people's lives, through living out my purpose, through actually engaging in life-giving activities. But you can also be significant by standing up there and being the gossip queen, making other people, you know, tearing people down, or like you said, over-dramatizing things. Control is a great way to get certainty. But if we don't have control over what's happening in the world around us, our job is insecure, our relationship may be insecure, we don't have control over our children or anything like that. So how do we gain control? All of a sudden, that's when controlling behaviors will start to come into relationships. So when it comes to social media and when it comes to all of these, like you mentioned, devices, if you think about from a human needs perspective, likes, the number of likes people get on a post.
Yeah, they get off on it. Well, I get off on it sometime too, though.
Yeah, but the number of likes that someone gets on a post.
Right, but that's validation. Right, it's validation. Oh, my God. Yeah.
significance and it's hitting connection, right? But it's unhealthy because it's fabricated connection and it's fabricated significance.
And these people don't know you. A lot of times they're just scrolling and they're liking.
Yeah.
And yeah, I get it, you know, or the comments. Oh, and they have this keyboard courage. They think they can say anything to you online. I wish you would say some of the stuff that I see come across to my face. I don't get too much hate mail, thank God. But, you know, when I do, I just really wish you would say that to my face. It'd be the last time I give you a tongue lash and you would never forget.
See, my approach is just to go, if they're having a go at me, I see their pain. I think, what are the possible needs they're meeting? There's shame there.
I see their pain, but I reflect it right back on them for a minute. Okay, it's human nature. Now, if I would just say, "Oh, okay, well, let's just have a go at it," and I understand your pain, and that's okay, Susie, or that's okay, Ashley. No, I'm gonna have to tell you that you're wrong or whatever, because we can agree to disagree and not be disagreeable. That's the challenge in the world today, is that people are not allowing people to disagree with their point of view. If I don't like peas, don't put them on my plate. But that doesn't mean that you can't eat them. That doesn't mean that I'm not going to, you know, like that. Certain women don't like certain shades of lipstick. Then don't wear it. But don't be condescending, because I do. Allow people to have choices and options.
Yeah.
That's what, as a parent, we need to start focusing on with our children, because your children are very small. They're generation, what? They're generation alpha, maybe. Are they alpha or Z?
I have no idea.
Okay, well, they're probably Z. I like to keep up with the little trends on that. They're not even having this conversation. They want clean water. They want the animals and the birds to sing. They want a tiny house. They want a Tesla. They want a device. You know, they want to be left alone, where that's a totally different set of social norms that I grew up with. And you're in the transition. You know, you understand that world, but also the world that we live in now. People's behaviors are dictated by that. How can we kind of, you know, behave, act better?
Honestly, it's not easy to hear the answer to that, because the answer to that is full self-responsibility. I sort of look, we mentioned parenting, right? So I look at my children. It's not my responsibility to make sure my children are happy all the time. It's not my responsibility to make sure my children get everything that they want all the time. But it's actually my responsibility to instill values in them so that they grow up to be a kind, loving, gracious human being. And so it's actually really hard, because there's times when they're having a tantrum about something where it would be absolutely easier for me to give in and give it to them. Or there would be times when, I could give a million examples, but sometimes it's okay to feel what we're feeling, but still set a boundary. So for example, if my daughter wants something and my daughter is very, very strong-willed, that girl is going to lead something significant in this world. It's terrifying, but hard to parent, but also really exciting. So she will feel so intensely and so strongly. And from the generation when I was a child, that expression of feeling was not acceptable. Like I would grew up in the time where it was be quiet or I will give you something to cry about.
Girl, do they say that down there too?
Yeah, right. And so now it's about managing the wounds that brings up for me and the programming that brings up in me, and kind of going, okay, it's not okay for you to have a bag of lollies for breakfast. I'm not okay with that. But it's also okay for you to be upset about that because you want the bag of lollies for breakfast. So it's okay for you to feel what you're feeling, but the answer's still no. And that's on me. That's self-responsibility for me to be able to set those boundaries. And I think we have a generation of people who were never taught, it was never modeled to us how to set boundaries in a healthy, centered, grounded way. Right. And so the difference between this,
because it was always with consequence. You know, you'll get a paddling timeout. You'll be something will be taken away. There was never a conversation about your feelings.
Yeah. And so to bring this back to a nervous system perspective, when we have a stress response or some kind of trigger around us activates our nervous system, we can get really familiar with what that activation feels like. Just jump in the shower and turn the hot water off, and you're going to feel what the nervous system feels like when it activates. But some of the responses that come up that are unhealthy are the fight response. Now, I say unhealthy because they can be unhealthy. So fight response looks like exploding with anger. It looks like, entitlement. It looks like being a bully. It looks like misplaced anger or being controlling. But then you've also got a freeze response, and unhealthy things that might show a freeze response will be things like dissociating. So just sitting there scrolling on your phone for hours and hours and hours and hours at a time because the world around you is no longer there.
Listening to the negativity, no wonder they're all twisted.
Yeah, but hiding from the world, isolating yourself, camouflaging. Then there's the flight response. Now, this is my personal favorite flavor of an unhealthy stress response. This is the types of behaviors I see in my life. But I get panicky and I rush things and I worry about things and I get like really busy. So when I'm really busy and I'm feeling activated, right, that's an evidence to me that my body's in a stress response. Mm-hmm. It's reacting to some kind of past trauma. Fawn is about becoming codependent, and we fawn to other people. So it's like we will serve them in a completely unhealthy way so that they will love us and accept us, and that servitude gives us safety. So when we have all of these nervous system responses, they are unhealthy responses.
Right.
But what happens is that when we experience some kind of trigger in our world, we can, like, let's say, for instance, my husband did something to annoy me. Now, I can set a healthy boundary from a grounded place. Like, I can say, I can see that you're upset, but it's not okay to speak to me like that. Or that's from a healthy, grounded place. Feel the energy in that, where it's firm, but it's setting a clear boundary, as opposed to me going, don't speak to me like that.
Oh my God.
Feel the difference in the energy. The same message.
And I'll tell you something else. In a relationship, husband and wife, when a wife kind of steps back and takes that cooler, calmer approach, watch the reaction of your partner.
Yeah.
They get a different response too. He's going to go, oh boy, she's serious.
Yeah.
But when you rage up and act out, that's the norm. That's what I expect. I'm just going to ignore that. It's not, you know, that's just her normal response. But when you step back and you're a little bit more strategic and you're calculated about your next move, or even taking hold and taking responsibility to what happened, you could have been the person that did something wrong.
Yes.
You have to look at all of that. And people don't give themselves enough time to process it.
No, it's just
right off the hands. Right. So it's just a pause, and it's a couple deep breaths can make all the difference in your life. Tell us what those six steps are specifically.
So the six steps, this is actually something that I came up with in a business perspective. So I was asked to deliver a presentation to a whole heap of business leaders on how to take your business from good to great. But the reality is these same six steps can be applied across every aspect of our lives. I apply this in my parenting. I apply this in my relationship, in my workplace, with everything. So the first step was to be clear on your why. So if I apply this to trauma and healing, many, many, many people, all they know is that they don't like their current situation. But unless you're clear on your why, you will stay there. So for me, my why was my kids. My kids gave me so much leverage to heal because I saw how the trauma that I experienced affected me, and I wanted more for my children when they were my age. So to be clear on your why is so important. And to give you an example of this, I had a client who had significant problems in their lives. They knew that they wanted their problems to be gone, but they came to me, and it actually turned out that the problems they were experiencing is the exact thing that made them eligible for welfare payments.
Wow.
The welfare payments paid their rent and fed their children. So unless you're clear on your why, that client decided that actually their problem was more of a solution for them than a problem, and they no longer completely flip the situation to go, wow, I don't want to heal from this, because if I do, I don't know how I'm going to put a roof over my head or feed my kids.
Mm.
So to be clear on your why, and actually ask yourself, how is my problem working for me? What's it getting me out of that I don't want to do? Had another client with severe depression. When I said to him, how is your depression helping you? What's it getting you out of that you wouldn't, you know, that you don't want to do? And he goes, oh, well, I can leave work early. My bosses are really understanding. It gets me out of going to social situations, et cetera, et cetera. So that problem was serving a purpose in their life. And unless you know that you feel safe to continue life without that problem helping you, then you're not going to get through it.
Right.
So how powerful is that, right?
Powerful. That's powerful.
Massively. So
what's number two?
Number two is to identify the gaps between what you know and what you believe. Now, that seems really crazy, but what we know is actually coming from a completely different part of the brain.
Right.
What we believe is coming from the deep regions of the brain. And so, for instance, you can have someone who knows that smoking is bad for them. It's literally killing them. It stinks. It's really expensive. But knowing all that is not enough to make them stop smoking.
Right.
Because if they believe that smoking calms them down, if they believe that smoking is a social thing and that that's how they connect, remember back to our human needs, connection, that belief is going to outweigh the knowledge every day of the week.
Mm.
So you need to identify the gaps between what you know, and if your life is not in alignment with what you know, then there is a belief system underneath it that's not actually matching up with that knowledge. So I knew that I was worthy of love, but I didn't believe that I was. And so,
that again leads to what I was saying, is that don't overthink it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But when your actions, we need to be willing to be vulnerable and observe our actions and behaviors, because if they're dysfunctional, if they're unhealthy, if they're hurtful, if they're reactive, then that is the evidence that there's belief systems or value systems or something underlying it that's driving it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So number three, get curious about your default reactions. Get curious about your default behaviors. Because if your default reaction when someone spews hate at you is to want to, you know, give, I can't remember the phrase you used before, give them a tongue lashing, get curious about that. It doesn't mean to say it has to change, but get curious and question it. Because what that does for me is to go, well, okay, I could justify it because they were nasty to me. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, we could justify that and the world would say that that's reasonable.
Right.
When I look at what in me is making me get so defensive,
right,
what is it? Is it that they're calling into question my authenticity? Is it that they're accusing me of lying? Is it that they're, you know, that they're saying that I lack integrity or something like that?
Or is it a mere reflection of what you see?
Yeah.
Are you seeing those same characteristics coming out in Ashley,
yes,
that you possess in April? It's exactly frightening, and you don't want to own up to it. You it's don't terrifying. Want to take responsibility. Yeah, you don't want to take responsibility for it. So what do? Yeah. You attack it, you know? It's exactly the elephant in the room. I get it.
Yeah, and honestly, the most powerful questions that I have ever asked anyone is, depending on the situation, but would you want to be married to you? The way that you respond to situations, the way that you deal with conflict, the way that you take care of even your, like, this was so revealing to me when I asked myself that question. We've been in lockdown for the best part of 2 years. I don't think I got out of activewear.
Right.
And I thought, would I want to be married to me? My poor partner hadn't seen me in anything other than activewear or pajamas in nearly 2 years.
Yeah, I know.
That inspired me to go, you know what? I'm actually going to get dressed up today. I'm going to take some pride in my looks today.
Absolutely.
So that's a massive one. And it's not easy to do. I fully acknowledge that it's not easy to do.
Exactly.
The fourth step is to learn about our own nervous system. So as I mentioned before, the best way, the number one way that I get people to do this is literally the cold shower. Because when people start describing things like anxiety or depression, quite often, or even anger, quite often what they're describing is an activation of the nervous system. And so the nervous system is designed to be kind of like an antenna, and it's constantly detecting perceived threats in the environment. But what might be a threat for me will not be a threat for you. So my nervous system might get activated in a social situation, But you thrive in a social situation because that doesn't feel like a threat. So getting to know our own nervous system, starting with what does it feel like when it's activated, and the cold shower is a really great way to do that, is so powerful, because then you can start to dissociate from anxiety or from those other labels and recognize that all that's happening in that moment is that my nervous system's activated. That's it. It's just data. And so when it's just data and it's not something that's happening to you, it is much easier to work your way through it.
That makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah, it's so powerful. So very much related to that one. Number five is learning about other people's nervous systems. So in my home, I know that there are certain things that I can do. So if I go, if I just take one deep breath like that and my eight-year-old hears it, straight away his nervous system activates. And he goes into, "Mom's angry, what have I done wrong?" When really I could just be exhausted. I'm not angry. I could just be exhausted. But his nervous system is detecting that, and he has an anchor to that deep breath. And so I can recognize that and be really sensitive to that in him, so that if his nervous system activates, I can support him in bringing it back to safety.
Right.
And it's the same with my partner. So, you know, we in relationships, quite often, if someone comes home and they've had a really bad day, our default, that activates us, and our default is, I must have done something wrong. You know, we have all of these thought processes that spiral through our minds. But by recognizing other people's nervous systems and feeling assured in our own, we can actually be in a much better place to hold them and support them and nurture them back to safety. Because safety, communicating with safety, is a healthy relationship. Activated communicating with activated is an activated relationship. That's right. Just, you know, a trigger right. Domino. Yeah. That's so powerful. And then the last step is to rinse and repeat. We don't just get to do this once. We don't just get to do this once and think that our life's work is done and we're completely healed and we've overcome everything. Because the reality is, our lives are always changing. Like in the last 2 months, I've gotten married. We've moved 2 houses. There's been significant changes in our lives. And so you couldn't expect for everything that I had learned about my nervous system and my behavior and, you know, what I knew and believed before to be relevant now, because things are different now. Right. We're in a different home. We're in a different relationship dynamic.
You have a chance to reframe the situation. Yeah.
So you have to rinse and repeat steps 1 to 5, because that is the key to adaptability.
Wow.
Life is always changing. And that's why, even as a practitioner, I offer people tune-up sessions. And so people will go, "Oh my gosh, you know, I've completely changed my life and everything's amazing and things are so different." But I let them know that it's actually normal to experience pain again. It's normal,
right?
Because life happens. And that's not to say that what you did before didn't work. All that means is that you now have a new set of circumstances and a new set of triggers, and you have the resources to continue to shed that trauma, to continue to grow and to continue to learn.
That makes perfect sense. You are just a super brain. And thank you so much for being here on The Edge with me and my brains. You really gave me a lot to think about. I took a lot of notes. And awesome. I'm so glad that I have the master of this interview so I can go back and really digest it. Because it's very simplistic, but it's like exercise. The hardest part is actually implementing it and doing it. You have this information. You've made it easy. And I love that number 6, rinse and repeat. Do it over and over and over again until it's ingrained in you. Tell my brain how to get in contact with you, to work with you, and talk to you. There's so many other things. You got to come back, girl, because we didn't even touch on nutrition and leaky gut. We didn't even get to that part. So I'm loving it. But tell my brains how to get in contact with you, Ashley.
All right. You can reach me at, I have a website, drashleymoreland.com. And on Instagram, it's just at @DrDrAshleyMoreland, and also on Facebook, just under Ash Moreland. So You can reach me lots of different ways. My email address is posted everywhere. It's just drashleymoreland@outlook.com. And I would love to hear from you.
And I love for you guys to take advantage of this because, again, she just peeled the layers back like an onion. And yes, it's going to make your eyes water and it's going to sting. Yeah. But once you put it in the pan, fry it up, it's going to caramelize and it's going to taste good. Like your life. We want it to be a good taste on that tongue. Thank you so much, Dr. Moreland. You are the business.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Be good to yourself, brains. I'm counting on you.